This is Ryan Thomas Neese.
And this is Nicole Neese.
And this is the Closer Podcast.
This is episode one of our podcast.
Very first episode.
Very first one. It's titled Closer? Question mark?
It's just like a little bit about why we're going to call it Closer. And sort of the notion that as people who help others for a living, therapists on the one hand and the friends. Other stuff that we do. Yeah. Even with our friends that who know that we're therapists, that it's always a little opaque. It's like hard to see us fully.
Yeah. Or feel seen maybe too.
Yeah, probably. And so this episode just sort of indicates what this is primarily an endeavor in for us, which is allowing people a step closer or a step differently close, that there's just a way to see us a little bit more clearly. And this is that.
Well said.
We hope.
We hope.
Here it is, episode one. Closer? So we decided to call whatever it is that we're doing here, recording, talking, something we've been really wanting to do for a long time. We decided to call it Closer. Name of our California-based sort of psychotherapy and beyond work that we do is juxta, which is a prefix in the English language. It's like juxtaposition is probably the word people know the most, or juxtapose. And juxta, the prefix, just means close by, alongside. And so, I don't know, like, Closer as a podcast name or as a name for a series of discussions sort of is about this idea that in the work that we do, you know, we can only be known so much. Like, the nature of the work that we do, even as a therapist, and a sort of a, you know, I think of us as doing mental and spiritual work with people. Like, as a disclosing one of those, like, I am among the most disclosing, like, worker of this type that I know.
Agreed.
Huh?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and I say more about what's going on with me, and it's because I am using everything that I think, feel, experience in the moment, and I'm sort of putting it at the disposal of the person in front of me as like a foil or a barometer for what's happening in the room, and then we sort of sort it out, you know, what the barometric pressure is together on the basis of what, okay, I'm experiencing this and you're experiencing that, and then somewhere we funnel it down to the truth. But even as a person who's really disclosing, you know, you're just aware people can only be so many concentric circles inward. So this feels like another step in, like letting people hear conversations between you and I,
which are
sometimes the types of things that I'm disclosing in the work that I do, but people don't always know that, like, you know, they only hear from me, essentially.
Right.
So that's one thing about Closer. To me, is like another concentric circle forward.
Yeah. And I think part of that circle, or sort of what you're alluding to or directly speaking to maybe even, is the conversations that I think that you and I have a lot of times. Like you, I'll reference my side or the conversation in session or with someone or something, but so often it doesn't hold everything that we've said. And I'll try and, like, as hard as I can, go back and be like, what was it? What was that one thing he said? Or what was the thing I said that I thought was really great? I can't access it because it was just like a fleeting moment, but it felt very powerful, and sometimes so powerful that it changes like something that I say or do with you. But then I like don't lock on to what the thing was that got me there. And so I think by like, for me, part of this is getting to like, one, memorialize that, two, potentially see it through a different perspective. Three, just entering into what it is to have a conversation with you.
What's number one again? They'll say it again.
To memorialize sort of like these conversations that I often have felt so moved by. Feel like are very powerful. Right?
Yeah.
And as I get older, I think my memory is not as great as it once was. So to be able to like listen back and reflect on that, also what might I take from it the next time? We certainly rehash a lot of conversations, say things multiple times, and each time new iterations of self come out of those conversations. So just to be able to like listen to it again, share it in a new way, all of that feels sort of relevant.
Yeah. I also think that as all of all the times that we've thought about doing this, that I have the impression that a lot of the things that are sort of like very implicit to our relationship are like people find them all at once. Like, you know, just thinking about like circles of our friends or, you know, people who, you know, are almost friends or, you know, acquaintances, or it's like people are sort of both compelled by them and also kind of like, they like, yeah, halfway can't believe that, like they halfway don't believe us.
Yeah.
That we really talk like this to one another. And then some of the time people are definitely like, ew, I would never want to like, you know, like, and it's usually like, I think it's a lot of that is like around levels of disclosure. Like it's, there's so much honesty.
Yeah.
Where honesty equals a lot of disclosure. A lot of the time. That I think people don't necessarily, again, they find it sort of strange and fascinating, not necessarily always the thing they'd want. And the feeling is kind of mutual. Like when I hear them, when people talk about our levels of disclosure indirectly or directly, and they sort of say that they're not compelling. And then I become aware that we do things a distinct way. And in thinking about that, I consider that they must be doing it some other way. Mm-hmm. Usually then I look at their, whatever I think of the relationships that they have in their life, and I'm usually like, yeah, I don't want to do it your way either. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting.
Are you rubbing your chin right now because you're trying to see if there's a...
No, I am...
Bump there or a hair or what's going on?
My chin.
I am rubbing like it. You were...
And I'm like, oh, I cut myself. And I was being tender to myself for a moment. Thank you for trying to make it sound like it's something else.
Well, I thought you were searching for a chin hair.
No, niece. Hey. But thank you.
Okay.
Oh, such sweet nothings.
Such what?
Sweet nothings.
So I think that's the gist of it then.
Yeah.
Sort of let people be party to another layer of conversation, what that's really like.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we're sitting here saying that, I'm thinking to myself, something I've said a bajillion times, I feel like when I talk about even why I became a therapist, right, was when I was younger, always liked to like look in people's houses when we drove by. I watched a shit ton of television and movies to try and gauge what this kind of relationship or that kind of relationship looked like. And then as I got into those kinds of relationships, I realized how much of a disservice media does to show you what like a real relationship can look like. And so much of our dynamic has opened me up to a world that I didn't even know existed. And I think that bringing people in closer this way hopefully does give a peek into what relationships can look like. Like, if that would be a nice takeaway, it would be that, yeah, people who love each other and are committed relationships can have dynamics like this and conversations like this. And like, it's not just sort of, you know, the way TV makes it look like. You don't have to talk about your feelings and everything will go away by the end of the episode and you'll start over tomorrow.
Yeah. You're wanting people to know that? That seems
important.
Yeah,
I don't know if other people feel that way, that they are like, oh, are relationships really, is that what they're like? They have this kind of disclosure? They talk like this?
Yeah, that's so strange to me that people would think that, but yeah.
But certainly in the work that we do, I mean, gosh, I have people come in and talk about the relationships and...
my sense, though, is that they... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
That they, like... that they are sort of vaguely aware that relationships are supposed to contain...
Mm-hmm.
And then... So it sort of creates a shadow, too, because they know it, but they kind of don't do it. And so they're aware of that, and they kind of keep that quarantined.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of don't have access to that either. It's like, and then you're already under two layers. Now is supposed to be having discussions that I'm not, and I'm covering for the fact that I'm supposed to be having discussions that I'm not. And supposed to be is also right. Like a misnomer. It isn't that like... the type of, you know, high disclosure, high conversation, which, by the way, isn't always positive.
No.
It's just one way of doing it.
Yeah.
And it's a way that I have needed you to help me walk back. You know, because some of the time I am working on something else by having lots of disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But... my sense is that people know it, then they kind of know that they don't do it, then they kind of got a shadow around that. So then, but you're right, though, something experientially is that, like, when they start figuring it out, there is a kind of like, oh, is this what it is? And it's like, yeah, just saying what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
To the best, I mean, admittedly, to the best of your insight, I don't know what else you could do, but to the best of your insight. And then let others around you, somebody you trust, help you expand your insight.
Yeah.
So that you see more and more and more and more about reality as a part of any discussion.
Yeah.
But like, once they start seeing it, it's like, yeah. I mean, the amount of clients that I talk to where the thing is just like... they're so bound up, they are feeling terrible, their relationships are in trouble, and then you find out that they just, in a way that I don't mean as a moral or character statement, I mean this as a factual statement, what I'm about to say, they just aren't honest about anything. Whatever the facts, sort of like plain facts appear to be, they're just not like... taking those facts and mobilizing them in their lives in any kind of active way. I feel XYZ, and then there's sort of no disclosure about feeling XYZ in the context of family, who they spend most of their time with. So let me get this straight. You're feeling this kind of way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't told your family at all, right? Correct. Mm-hmm. And how are you feeling? Not good.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. But now the trick, of course, is that they have reasons
right.
why they don't.
Yes.
And sometimes those reasons are very real.
Right.
Like, it's not just like in their head. It's that it amounts to a tremendous risk, and sometimes a risk that is actually not a productive risk, to become more honest. And yet, if that isn't kind of a general aspiration, honest maybe is the word I keep using here, but it's really about being congruent. What's going on the inside is what is going on, you know, what's going on for me on the outside as well, even though they don't, you know, they may not exactly look the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you and I are like, you know, we talk about this often, about the different ways in which we learn, interpret, experience the world. And, you know, I think you have access to certain things that take a couple extra steps for me to get to at times, and vice versa. But I've always been a visual learner, for the sake of like what I'm trying to say here. And so this would be auditory, not visual, but being able to hear or see or listen to what that looks like, and really having something to pinpoint it to.
What looks like?
Disclosure, if in a safe space to be able to talk to the person that you say, hey, here's what, to be congruent, how do I do that? If you've never had that, if you grew up in a household where you couldn't do that, or it was, you tried to do it, but it wasn't received well, or any of those sorts of things, to start doing it, especially in adulthood. You know, and granted, I met you in my late 20s, but still a fair amount of life lived prior to meeting you. There are a lot of things that I had never learned just about being in relationship with people.
Yeah.
Not just relationship with you, but I learned a lot about being in relationship with people, just people, by being in relationship with you. And I learned about being in it with myself.
Yeah. Yeah, which is something that's interesting too, that last statement you made about being in relationship with with one another has helped you learn things about relationships in general. And it's like, because, you know, coming of age in the sort of evangelical Christian world, you know, accidentally, there's a lot of stuff in the era that we grew up in. We're both 45. And so, you know, think of, you know, becoming sort of elementary aged in the late 80s, 1980s, 1990s is high school. There's a lot of self-help borrowed and sort of baptized in Christian words.
Yes.
Or in words that evangelical Christians use, such as, I mean, the amount of times I was told that like I needed to figure out a bunch of things about relationships so that I could be sort of like healthy to be in one.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, you remember that somebody told me, you know, Ryan, I just really think you need to stop dating for a while.
Yes, I do remember.
And you were the next person I yeah. I ignored that advice. You were the next person I met, and we got married.
Yep.
And
stuff.
So not only do people not know maybe,
yeah,
and don't have any context for what it looks like to do certain things, especially trying to attempt them after, you know, living 20, 30, 40 years on the earth without doing them with any level of intentionality, sort of just what you stumbled into.
Yeah.
Also, we've been given, depending on, you know, and we come from that sort of background, but a lot of people don't.
Right.
But whatever background you came from, you do have a lot of ideas, whether or not you recognize them.
Yes.
You know, about what things are supposed to be. And again, if the litmus test, though, and I really think of this as being something that's really specific to specific to my outlook, the thing that seems to be fueling a lot of my current things that feel positive about my development at this, it's like that the locus of control there, the locus of how am I doing in the world, is really an internal barometer. You know, you spend most of your young life, adolescence, childhood and adolescence, 20s, 30s, being told so much about, you know, this is what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And a freaking dude, it's epidemic in our culture
with, and this is the true sort of wayward byproduct of the information age, there's such a glut of information to digest about things. And all of this keeps the standard, the locus of the standard by which we will compare ourselves and to which we will hold ourselves, it's all outside. And then meanwhile, so again, in client work, a lot of the work that I do is helping people pull that locus inside, because you can perform to spec with what, you know, some person or some group of people is saying, some church or something, mm-hmm. or your family, right? And you can be freaking deeply miserable on the inside. Mm-hmm. But as long as your implicit belief is that the locus of the standard is external, well, it doesn't matter what you think on the inside. But if you pull it inward and are like, how I'm feeling on a day-to-day basis is relevant to my life. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people don't seem to know that if you want to feel better, you have to look at your life. Like, what you're doing currently is set up perfectly to get you what you have.
Right.
And if you would like something different, you have to do something different. Right. So for me, part of this too is about exposing how we evaluate things in our lives. And yeah. how, you know, we have tried to pull a lot of the control center interior. To an interior place. I mean, I guess that's not that unusual for me. I certainly have, you know, Enneagram type 8.
Yeah.
Don't control me. I hear myself saying that. And I'm like, oh, is this what you really want to be saying? I guess it is.
Yeah.
But there is a positive side to that. It can become an absolute tyrant in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking?
Yes, absolutely. No. Some of that attitude, some of that approach, that perspective, however you want to say it, is the very thing that I was just sort of like alluding to. I learned how to be in relationships with people, with myself, with you, because of our relationship and because the way that you are oriented towards things, some of that being, which feels like an unkind way of saying it. Always the thing with the Enneagram where they would say it kind of in this, like, you don't like to be controlled. It always felt kind of negative to me.
It's your core fear, is what they would say.
But I'm just like, also, it's the very thing that has helped equip you and is the reason that you have the perspective and the orientation that you do. And it is different than mine. I do have a similar, like, part of me that's like that. But I just come at it from a different side of the prism, right? Like, I just come in through the back door, you go in through the front door.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have needed to understand, and it really isn't other, right? Like, I'm glad you used that prism metaphor. There's about 500 ways to refract the light, but it's like, I've needed to learn other things. And I don't really feel like principally, you know, that orientation, like, is the only guiding force in my life anymore. You know, I've had to learn how to see things from other angles. What would you say it is that yours is, if that's mine?
Mm.
If mine is about, you know, thinking about the ways in which the control, locus of control, locus of a standard by which I will compare and live my life, that's sort of my orientation is around those questions. What do you think yours is? Hmm. No pressure, just to pull it off the top of your head.
Darn it. There it is again.
There's what?
The ways in which you can access things so quickly are like, I mean, sometimes your questions cause me to be like, oh shit, let me think about that for not a minute. But, like, can I get back to you in a day or 2 days? Yeah. Or, like, let me, because I really need to sit and think about it. I don't know if what I'm about to say answers your question.
I was going to say, we could do that here.
Right. Come back to it. My initial reaction to what you're saying is I want to say that, like, what drives me a lot is this idea of being, like, received and understood. Like, that feels like a large drive for me. And so I look for ways to connect with people on some sort of common plane that says, maybe not identical, probably not identical, probably not even maybe close to identical, but I can tap into a thing and then I can connect with you and you will then know me better and I will know you better. And then I can be at peace, right? So there's the peacemaker of the nine of the Enneagram is like, I am, my belly is centered when all is understood. Which, as I say that, recognize that like that feels like an impossible task as well, because I don't know if I can be fully understood if I don't even fully understand it myself. So this is why I need 2 days to think about it. Can we come back? Because as I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, refine.
Well, but that is, I mean, from an Enneagram perspective, that is part of your orientation, is that you don't know right away.
Yeah. Well, and it's speaking exactly to the thing that I'm saying, is to be understood. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to say it if what I'm saying isn't going to, like, drive the point home. Like, if you aren't going to get it right away, right? So one of the things I've learned with you, which I did not enjoy doing at the very front of our relationship, was to process out loud all the things that would help me get to that point.
Yeah.
And part of that was because my core fear was that if you were to hear those things and they weren't exactly right, I couldn't have a take back to, quote, Good Will Hunting. Famous scene with Minnie Driver and
yeah.
Take Back. What's a take back? I want a take back. Do you remember that scene in the movie where Minnie Driver's at the door and Matt Damon is there and it's at the very end of the movie and he's like, she's like, he offers her a take back. He's like, I don't know if you want to take it back. And she's like, a take back? What's a take back? I don't want a take back. I like loved that line. And the
that is a good line. I forgot about it. It would be good. I'm not very good at, I'm like a generally does not issue take backs to anyone ever. I'm like, nope, you said it. Yeah. It reveals your interior life.
Oh, that's really
life.
Great. So then I should just continue to process out loud then.
Yeah, it's not very...
Sounds like really motivating to me.
Yeah, it's not very... it's not a catch-22 at all.
No,
we swear.
Not at all.
Yeah, well, I see that. I also see that you didn't have... Like, in hiding from some things about myself that I, like, didn't want to see. Like, there are things about me that when I hear them, this is one of them, it's happening right now, I realize that I'm different.
Yeah.
And, you know, I, like, in a way that is powerful for me to even still sort of experience it as I'm experiencing it right now emotionally, I like, have shame about that.
Mm.
Like, as soon as, you know, there's a great quote that my, one of my clients said to me the other day that I was talking to my friend Rob about, but it's a Kafka quote, and it's something to the effect of, I discovered that like life is a costume party and everyone else, like I went, everyone else was in costume and I went with my real face, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So in sort of like wanting to avoid some things about me that are like, oh, it isn't that no one does them, but like that this is kind of different about you. I then didn't see, in not seeing my own difference, I was unable to respect the ways in which you were you.
Hmm.
And so I was like demanding, and I can still be this way, as we're both no doubt aware, that like you do this thing because it's productive to do. And it's sort of like, you know, like you're just saying here, now I don't kind of do that. And then I'm telling you to do it. And then you're also offering me the feedback that my reactions to that can be, you know, also contraindicating.
I would like to believe that while a lot of what you just said is true.
Are you kidding me right now? You hear this.
That.
So what you're saying is, you know, accurate. That's one perspective. Another perspective that's totally different than that and more correct is the following.
Not more correct, but more developed from the original statement, which is you were like that and can still be like that. I think that just as I have learned a lot of things about myself and relationships, you have learned a lot. So you have come toward me in that, like, hey, if you want me to talk about this out loud and it's not fully developed and you're not a take back kind of person, you've had to learn to, like, offer me room to just do it, even if I don't know yet. Yeah. So that, like, we both have grown in that area. It's not just, you said it, you meant it, that's it. Which is also, oddly, what I'm saying I had. It was because once I would say it, I'd be like, well, I've said it, and now I can't unsay it. It's that stupid, what is that colloquialism from when we were kids? Like, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. Like, if, God, that hadn't been, like, the theme of my entire life before I met you. Like, I just would, like, keep everything inside, and I only said the really nice things. And then if I, God forbid, said something that was remotely hurtful to someone else or myself, whole world imploded, right? Like, it just... So to learn to be able to say out loud, hey, I don't know that this is fully formulated yet. This is how I'm feeling in this moment, or this is what I'm thinking in this moment. Can I give you draft one, draft two, draft three, draft four? And for you to be like, yeah, let's work on draft one, draft two, draft three, draft four together.
Right.
Like, you do come towards, which is not what I think Minnie Driver and, Matt Damon were saying in that movie, because it was a different version of a take back, but nonetheless, I still like the phraseology, like, of... I don't want to take back. I think it was meant to say I accept you regardless in that movie scene. But
well, he's just saying also it's no... I think it is the same in some ways. It's just saying it's no big deal.
Yeah.
You can get a take back. It's fine.
Yeah.
You can say I didn't actually mean that. And certainly you've done that plenty. I think, again, the thing that I'm aware of, though, is that, like, I don't know that, like, people can't. You couldn't.
Yeah.
Immediately identify what is happening for you. Like, I didn't know that that was not a thing. And it isn't that I can't ever, like, say it and then need to refine it some more later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or that, like, ooh, now I'm in touch with new information, but actually not a lot. I usually know right away, and I still think it 3 days later.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that you couldn't do that. And no doubt, part of how I came toward you in the evolution of our relationship was, you know, eventually being able to give you time to process. On the other end, I had an extreme lack of tolerance, an extremely low distress tolerance for, I need time to process, because right. I was scared that you would not come back.
Right.
And sometimes that fear has been founded in our relationship. Yes. You mm-hmm. would like,
I'm still thinking about some things.
Yeah, exactly. You're all, no, I didn't forget. I'm all bullshit.
I know it's
you
been
forgot.
15 years, but it's
yeah, exactly.
still in process.
You know, but also, to be fair, just for standards of comparison, whenever I have reported your typical processing time, you know, for situations we would come up on over the years, when I have reported them out to, like, therapists, they'd be like, dude, that's pretty fast.
I'm yes, like, oh. Thank you, therapists. Thank you. Vindication at
I'm
last.
Like, dude, she came back really quick. Like, why are you? And I'm like, quick, you know. But again, recognize yeah. that my standard of comparison, right. and that's where I don't really get it. I'm like, I have some lightning rod inside that I'm always yes. can't not be in touch with, that I
actually at times wish that I could not be in touch with. I can feel it right now as we're talking. Like, it's from like my like middle of my sternum all the way into the pit of my stomach. There is like a field of energy that feels like a solid rod, and that I that is got white electricity all over it. And if I want to know where, like, what, where I'm at with something, all I have to do is reach out and grab it, and it's like, and then I can discharge that interior knowledge, interior experience into verbal knowledge. And when I say it with words, it very much loses something.
Mm-hmm.
But it is as, I can do that as closely to, this is what the words version of my interior life is like, yes, right now, as anybody I know. I did not know that was weird. And so my standard of comparison with you was like, why can't you do this?
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is like so much of your early relationship is like, why can't you do the thing that I'm doing? Why can't you just, I mean, Lord, it is the basis of 80% of our arguments over,
yeah,
time and space.
Yeah.
Why won't you do the thing that I'm asking you to do, which seems really easy and doable if you're me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it makes me want to cry. I mean, I like hate how frequently that is the subject of, you know, difficulty. And it's because I did not understand that being with another person did not iron everything out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that it was like you got together and it kind of, and I find that I thought this about so many things, not just relationships, that like there's struggle and turmoil when you're young, primarily because you're, you know, inexperienced. And then as you get older, you figure stuff out and it all works out. And it's like, no, you just keep fucking it up. And then looking backwards and be like, oh, I know that now. Hence why the phrase, you know, youth is wasted on the young. It's like, oh, this would have been really good to know,
mm-hmm,
back when I was doing that.
Yeah.
But you didn't know until after you did that.
Right.
And that's the sort of bitch about experience, is that you kind of have to learn your way into it. And, you know, here we are at midlife and, you know, and then you know that older people look at you who are 30, 20, 30, 40 years older than you, and they're like, yep, and it just keeps right on happening.
Yep. And there it is again. Right? So everything we were just saying is like exactly what I'm talking about. You just said, I thought, you know, didn't know that being in a relationship wouldn't iron everything out. Why didn't you think that? Well, whatever you read, watched, experienced up until that point gave you some other narrative for what relationship is.
Yeah, but I don't think just everything is given to us, though, either. A lot of it is, no, like, it is, in other words, like just somebody told you wrong, right? Which is such, mm-hmm, a common refrain in our, mm-hmm, culture. Like, and I remember like, you know, with talk shows in the 80s and 90s, it was, you know, I remember my parents sort of having this attitude, like, everybody gets on TV to complain about their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, right, so it's not just that we're complaining about the sources of information that we had. It's like, no, this is just actually being alive, is thinking it's one way and, mm-hmm, then discovering it's another way.
Mm-hmm.
Agree or no?
Agree. Yes, I agree. I'm just doing the thing that I normally do, which is I have a separate sideways point, like just slightly diverted from the pathway, which was us having this conversation and making this public to other people is another way for someone to see that, and maybe here at 28 or 29, that no, it's, you're going to figure it out as you go through all this crap. And that's actually kind of normal, what you've seen up until this point, or however you've interpreted that. Yeah. Right.
Well, I'm glad that whenever you deviate from the path that I'm here to bring you back into the fold.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all important. It's all relevant. No, your point's good, too. It's good. It's good. It's good.
So I think that's good for today, yeah?
Yeah,
it's this good. This is a good introduction to
you know, a sort of relational purpose that, like, I think we'll have more words to wrap around it as we go along, but, like, it also sort of feels important not to, like, if you've listened to this podcast episode and you think what we've said is interesting and compelling, then you're likely to find wherever we go from here interesting and compelling, which is to say it follows a certain relational thread. But naming that thread too precisely, if like that's a thing, this is probably not the one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it can't be done, but because what we were saying earlier is like the danger of living in a worded world is that we think the words we use to describe things are really, really, really super real.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, they're metaphors. For, you know, you and I sit together and look at a sunset.
Mm-hmm.
We're really experiencing it. I turn and say to you, XYZ, boy, isn't that sunset fill in the blank? It has automatically lost something, even if you find the words that I'm saying to be accurate. So, like, in a sort of intentionally unworded way,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is what it is.
Yeah. Good job.
Good job.
High fives.
High five. Colin Robinson.
And by your side.